When that happened, you know, that's what created his vision for VistaPath. And when I heard that story, I couldn't help but connect to it. I too was a lab manager that, you know, led teams that made similar mistakes. And I remember losing sleep over some of these mistakes, some mistakes that I have made as a tech, as a PA. And I knew I wanted to help make sure that that never happened again. Yeah. And, you know, I think our team and our PAs, I feel like they deserve a little bit better resources, and our patients deserve the best tech out there.
Welcome to the People of Pathology podcast. I'm Dennis Strank. On this podcast, we explore pathology, laboratory medicine, forensic science, and regulatory milestones in digital pathology. Until now, AI in pathology has predominantly involved analysis of microscopic images. But I've often wondered, when will AI be applied to the beginning of the process, specimen grossing? Mateo Lopez from VistaPath is here today to talk about this very thing. The Sentinel is an AI-powered grossing station that can significantly improve accuracy in grossing. Let's hear about some of the applications of this system with Mateo Lopez. Well, first of all, thanks for being here with me today. This is going to be really interesting.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Dennis. I'm actually a really big fan of your show. I really appreciate the content that you make. I think I was just listening to the episode on cloud-based technology. So I'm really, you're really excited. Again, I'm a fan of this show. So this is actually a big honor for me.
Oh, cool. Well, thank you very much for that. Mm-hmm. All right. So let's start with your background, because we're both pathologist assistants. Mm-hmm. And I always like to get people's backstory. Like, how did you find out about this field?
Yeah. So most of us probably didn't grow up wanting to be pathologist assistants or anything. And my story is pretty similar. I think growing up, I was always interested in the sciences. My parents bought me like a little plastic microscope when I was a kid. And I remember taking that out into the backyard and looking at leaves and whatever I could find with that thing. And my dad was also in healthcare. So he was a respiratory therapist, eventually got into being a director. So I just kind of grew up with both those things. So it made sense in undergrad to pursue like pre-med or, you know, biology. And I was in my senior year, still didn't really know what I wanted to do. I was struggling with biochemistry, and our professor was just hungry for a larger audience at after school presentation that she was hosting for different healthcare professionals to draw attention to. And one of them was surgical pathology and led by a pathologist assistant. So I was, by chance, picked that presentation and sat in, and it just sounded like a dream job to me. I was a TA for anatomy and physiology. So I loved being in the lab. I knew that part. And then again, you know, I kind of grew up around healthcare and I wanted to help patients and kind of connect those two things together if possible. So when I was sitting there, I was just thinking, you get to cut up organs and get paid to do that? Like, that sounds like a dream job. So it was something, you know, incredibly exciting. And I can't believe it was, you know, one of those by chance types of things.
That's funny. It's like almost everybody I've talked to, it's always like this accident or this sort of by chance sort
exactly.
of thing, like you just said. Yeah. And it was the same way for me too. I just happened to, I ended up out of college. I had a biology degree and I couldn't find a job. And eventually, like, I think it was like a year and a half later, I ended up as a lab assistant in a histology lab, which I didn't know anything at all about, but there was a PA there. And I was watching her work and it's like, this is amazing. I want to do that.
Yeah.
Now, you eventually got into management then in the lab. Mm-hmm. All right. So I kind of want to go through, like, all right, you get out of PA school, you're working as a PA, and then take me like through sort of the career path into management.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think it's pretty interesting, just like, again, the PA that did that presentation, actually, you were talking about, you know, being a tech, sort of entry mm-hmm. level. That PA that gave the presentation, I went up to him afterwards and asked him about, you know, if he had any openings, and he did. So it was interesting.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that same PA, I ended up being a tech for, and I got my degree in undergrad, started grossing, applied to Rosalind Franklin. And during that, which I feel like I was thinking about this story. It's crazy. It was during the third worst snowstorm in Chicago history for my interview. Oh. So I'm this kid from Texas, never been to Chicago, never driven through snow, through one of the worst snowstorms ever. And, you know, I'm stuck in my hotel. At one point, I was digging my car out of snow, and I've never been in snow that deep. And I didn't know snow could get underneath the hood of a car either. So, okay. The whole time I was, and you're probably familiar with this being up in Wisconsin, you know, I just kept thinking, uh-huh. Better get into this program. It was just a crazy experience to just become a PA. And then eventually came back to the same lab and ended up being the manager. And I think it was more of a thing where just being available and using my knowledge and kind of being, again, you know, I'd been through that lab before I even got into PA school. So eventually you're at a place for so long that you organically become that leader. So before I was officially manager, in some ways I was already leading. And I think, you know, a lot of PAs are managers or leaders in some ways of the workflow and of the environment. And then it's more of an organic thing. It's something that you're kind of called to do in a lot of ways, and not really something that you're looking for anyways. And that's kind of, I guess, my management story. Eventually I was in charge of operations. So that included histology and several locations in our division. So.
Okay. Okay. So while you were manager, did you miss grossing?
Absolutely. I think in the beginning I had to do a little bit of both, a little bit too much.
Okay.
So, but then, yeah, eventually it got to the point where I was hardly grossing at all. And I certainly had missed that. But I think, when you mature in your career, you get to influence other departments and you kind of just change some of the things that interest you. So when you're in a manager role, you get to do things like talk to nursing, talk to executives, help people get into PA school. And some things that these are things that you can't really do if you're constantly on the bench. So yeah, again, I think I missed grossing, but I learned to love the benefits of leading.
Yeah, it sounds like it was rewarding, but in a different sort of way.
For sure, for sure.
Yeah, okay. All right, and then right now you're working at VistaPath. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, how did you decide, okay, this is the time to move into industry?
How'd that happen? And it's funny, you know, I think with my story of being called to manage, it was sort of a similar thing. I think being a manager, you get kind of frustrated with, I guess, lab mistakes and errors, or at least I did. And, you know, I kind of just saw this lack of innovation in certain areas in our lab. And I think that kind of frustrated me. I'm a big technology and gadget kind of person. So I just felt like called to join the vision that VistaPath had more than it was, you know, hey, I'm done with management. It was more of a, hey, this is really exciting. I feel really called to impact the field. I think, again, you know, when I was a manager, I felt called to help our team because they certainly needed me. But it got to a point where I was able to promote other leaders around me. And I just felt like it was a good time to kind of do a little bit of a pivot.
I can understand that. Can you talk a little bit about the history of VistaPath and like why it was founded?
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's actually a good, you know, I was talking about mistakes and we think about our gross room as much as we want to. We try to teach our teams to slow down and make connections with specimens, almost like, you know, it's a specimen. It could be something that belongs to your loved one. I remember thinking like, this could be my wife's specimen or, you know, my son's specimen when I was grossing more. And even though we teach that, the reality is our lab is sometimes chaotic, our gross rooms. You might have multiple frozens coming in and every surgeon, you know, they'll think, hey, you know, my patient or, you know, my procedure is the most important one, or a pathologist wants a specimen pulled. So I think our gross rooms can be very chaotic and we have increasing volumes and decreasing staff. And what that can create is an environment where we make mistakes. I think almost 70% of lab errors happen at this pre-analytic phase. So it makes sense that sometimes mistakes happen at grossing, and a mistake is actually what led to the vision for VistaPath to be founded. Our founder, Tim Spong, he's from the lab world. He was in the lab world for 15 years, and he eventually, you know, similar path. He was a tech and he became a manager. And one of the labs he was managing, a tech switched a couple of cases, which unfortunately led to a patient being misdiagnosed with prostate cancer. when he didn't actually have it, and he had his prostate removed, even though it was actually, he was healthy. So that changed him like forever. When that happened, you know, that's what created his vision for VistaPath. And when I heard that story, I couldn't help but connect to it. I too was a lab manager that, you know, led teams that made similar mistakes. And I remember losing sleep over some of these mistakes, some mistakes that I have made as a tech, as a PA. And I knew I wanted to help make sure that that never happened again. Yeah. And, you know, I think our team and our PAs, I feel like they deserve a little bit better resources, and our patients deserve the best tech out there. And that's what we believe we have in our product, the Sentinel.
Okay. So this is another, you mentioned before, like sort of, it was a calling for you, which having heard this story, I can understand how that would happen. That's very, it's kind of an inspiring sort of mission, I think.
For sure. You know, I think everyone has their own like why statement or like a little bit of their own thing. And it just really connected with me. Like I said, I've always wanted to use my experience however I can to empower other people to a brighter future. And I think it meant leading and being a manager at one point. But then I felt like, hey, this is a different type of calling with a more broad type of future.
Yeah, I definitely get that. So your role at VistaPath is Director of Customer Success. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? What do you do in this role?
I just talked about my why, and it sort of serves that, right? I use my background in pathology and leadership to help create trust with our customers. You know, it's a very new product, and the lab, in some ways, we have an existing ecosystem, and that ecosystem often is left untouched, and it's kind of like, this is the way we've always done it. So it feels a little bit disruptive when we put in new technologies like digital pathology. And it's sort of the same with the Sentinel. I see it as a little bit easier as far as adoption. But, you know, again, it's this space where we've got limited margin for adding new things or errors. So it's just a certain type of environment where we need to create a lot of trust. And that's something that my primary role I see is doing. And I've always loved this. You know, I think when I was a manager, I enjoyed talking again with nursing, for example. I would do education on, hey, like this is what formalin does to specimens, or talking with clinicians about new things like documenting cold ischemia time. I always enjoy that. And in some ways, that's what I do now with our customers. I help them with change management. Again, this is new technology, and just kind of using my background to help make sure that they see the value of the Sentinel. And then also when they have feedback, that I can voice that to our engineers.
Okay. I like it. I like that sort of two-way communication with the feedback loop. That's important. So VistaPath's mission is to modernize pathology. That's sort of their kind of catchphrase or whatever you want to call it. But can you explain what that mission, what does that mean, like kind of within the company?
Yes. You know, I see us as a very different company, especially with my background in lab. We're an AI and data-driven engineering company that really wants to bring attention and innovation to a part of the workflow that a lot, for several years, we haven't really updated grossing in this part of histology. So that's kind of our core mission. We want to modernize pathology, but specifically, we want to start at the beginning. And people love to work with us because we're really passionate about this part of the workflow. And we want to give, again, like grossing histology the attention that it deserves. And I think, again, like our patients deserve that. Yeah, because, people that are excited to work with us, they share this passion and desire to innovate the workflow. Like our team, not just Tim and I, like obviously we've had Tim, our CEO, and myself, we've had firsthand experiences in the labs, but our whole team has had, you know, stories of either being the patient or maybe their family member being the patient. So this is something that is also deeply personal to us.
Yeah, you mentioned that having that why a little bit earlier, and it sounds like the whole team has a why, even if it's different from person to person, but that's good. That keeps you motivated to keep innovating. I like it. All right, let's get into the Sentinel. So this is VistaPath's flagship product. what is the purpose of the Sentinel, and can you give kind of an overview of what it does?
Yeah, for sure. Essentially, it's a modern grossing station, but okay. the difference is it has proprietary AI that can generate a gross description in less than a second. So, you know, that to me makes it stand out quite a bit. On top of that, we offer quality in live images of the cassette, the container of the tissue that we put in the cassette, which this helps us address things like, you know, if a clinician disagrees with the number of pieces in a container, or maybe what was labeled on the container. These are things, as far as some of the new things that it brings to the table. We have the ability to have these images of the container and of the cassettes to the pathologist, so they can see that on the report itself. And not only like is it images, it's data. And it's data that is incredibly accurate and consistent. I don't know about you, Dennis, but there's been times where I've seen in the field, you know, certain things aren't measured, or at least not accurately. And, sure. You know, often we're using a ruler that's really dirty or faded. And if we're using some of these techniques for things impacting patients, it's a bit of a disservice to what we need to provide to them. So to me, it makes sense to leverage machine learning and AI to generate data that is accurate, that can be used upstream and downstream of grossing to offer, you know, insights that we would never be able to see before.
This is really interesting. So this is, you're using it, it's basically like computer aided measurement.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So like you said, it's going to be a lot more accurate than the plastic rulers that we all use.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And we generate the three dimensions to the accuracy of half a millimeter,
oh, wow.
Less than a second. So, and we can do three cassettes at a time, however many pieces of tissue in those cassettes, and that length of time doesn't change.
Okay. And then you said it creates a gross description for you.
Yeah, right? Yes. We leverage templates. We kind of work with a lab. We really want to be seen as a very flexible platform. So the existing terminology and templates, that's a part of my role as the customer success director, is to connect and know what those are, and to build those into our Sentinel so that it knows, you know, what template fits, what situation, and kind of working with the existing cassettes and containers and materials that the lab uses.
Can the customer like customize the templates?
Absolutely. You can do it directly on the device too.
Interesting. All right. So it sounds pretty flexible.
Mm-hmm.
This is the People of Pathology podcast with our guest, Mateo Lopez. We'll be right back.
LabVine is an interactive online learning platform where laboratory professionals learn, develop, and discover by sharing knowledge and building on each other's experience. The platform provides global access to internationally accredited laboratory-specific courses and other resources developed by lab specialists, like us, for the laboratory industry. LabVine is free to sign up, and you can use the link in the show notes to get started.
If you think it would be nice to have a helpful reference about digital pathology, I have some great news for you. Dr. Alexander Zhurdov has written a book called Digital Pathology 101, All You Need to Know to Start and Continue Your Digital Pathology Journey. This book will help you, whether you're a complete novice or a digital pathology trailblazer. You can get a copy of it by following the link in the show notes. Now for the rest of my conversation with Mateo Lopez on the People of Pathology podcast. Okay. What types of specimens can you gross with the Sentinel?
Primarily, it's specimens that are entirely submitted. We like to say, hey, if it can fit in a cassette, you can run it on the Sentinel. So right now, that's sort of the focus. I mean, technically, we could put, again, anything that fits in a cassette there. But the main value is with those specimens that can be entirely submitted. And we're just getting started. We really want to expand to other tissue types and even go more granular in terms of, you know, once it's in a cassette, what are some of the features of the tissue as we continue to mature? What we can do right now is actually help grocers with specimen handling, or sometimes we get feedback from histology that our sections were too thick. We can actually tell the grocer that while they're using the Sentinel. So if a manager says, I don't want any of our sections to be thicker than 4 millimeters or something, we can build that into the Sentinel. And before they submit the cassette, it'll kind of flag them and say, hey, you know, don't submit this section. It's a little bit too thick. It needs to be sectioned. So that impacts reprocessing. And then, you know, as I said, with errors, and this is sort of the why behind the Sentinel, was that original Sentinel event. We are constantly monitoring the grossing process for barcode mismatches from beginning to end. So it's not like we're just checking it at one point while the tech or PA is using it. It's throughout the whole thing. So that's sort of a hard stop if it notices there's any mismatch with patient information.
So it's another, I guess, probably like a triple check of all the barcoding and scanning. I want to go back to what you said about the section thickness, because I mean, this makes a lot of sense, so that you don't have anything that's too thick and doesn't process well. But I feel like that opens up the possibility of using this for like an educational purpose.
For sure.
For either like with PA students or even with pathology residents.
Right. Yeah. I think right now we often use the nickel or a stamp in a cassette, right? I don't know if people are still using that. I probably don't use change in stamps too much anymore, but I know that's what we like to use back in the day. But now, again, the Sentinel can tell us, give us feedback like that before we do it.
I like that. That's a great extra feature, I think. Mm-hmm. Okay, so are there plans to, you probably can't say much about this, but are there plans to sort of expand the capabilities of the Sentinel to more types of tissue?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Again, you know, we're kind of just getting started with a lot of this, and our vision is to build in more granular feature detection. Not only just saying, hey, the section is too thick, but maybe like key characteristics of the tissue in the cassette that could help, you know, maybe the pathologist and others downstream.
I'm curious if when you're showing this to people, and maybe you're doing demos or whatever, and you've got, because it uses AI, and you know, there's some mistrust about that these days. And I'm curious if you get any sort of pushback from this machine, like, oh, it's going to eliminate my job, or, you know, I don't trust the machine, that kind of stuff. Is there resistance to this?
You know, I think I get the sense of it. Like, I don't think anyone ever yet has come up to me and outright said, you know, hey, this is Skynet or anything like that.
Right.
But yeah, I can kind of tell. So, I mean, I really want to push again, like the why behind it was never to replace anybody. It's really to help whoever's using it to not make the same mistakes, that similar mistakes as far as mixing up specimens. We require somebody, it's human augmentation. It's not human replacement. So somebody needs to run the Sentinel. And what it does is it allows you to focus on the things that grocers excel at, which is, you know, sectioning and even looking at the histories, and even like freeing up your mind for more complex specimens.
Okay. I like that you said that it's augmentation rather than replacement, because what I've said before is like AI should be thought of as augmented intelligence rather than artificial intelligence, meaning that it's supposed to help us. Like you said, it's supposed to help us rather than replacing us. So I'm glad you mentioned that.
And I'm sure, you know, with pathologists, they might hear similar things, or, you know, with digital pathology. But as you know, it can only do so much. And if anything, it's here to help us. It's really here to streamline things, but there's just limitations on the technology.
So until now, it seems like, since you mentioned digital pathology, it seems like most of the AI applications have been in that area as far as like analyzing slides. And now with the Sentinel being specifically for grossing, do you feel like there's going to be more applications of AI technology in grossing?
Absolutely. The more and more the workflow becomes digitized and automated, I didn't really talk about the automated embedders or, you know, microtomy tools that we're seeing, but I see more and more the rest of the workflow becoming digitized, because, I mean, you can have all those advancements in histology and even in digital pathology as far as scanning, but what if there's a mistake that happens at grossing? right? Or there's a mismatch, or maybe the tissue's even lost. That to me is why we're really excited about what we're doing with the Sentinel. We actually released a couple of new products at the end of last year. One's called Sentinel Merge, and it allows you to combine multiple specimens into a single cassette. And this is done safely because we're monitoring the entire process with the Sentinel. And then we also have Sentinel Link, which will allow a lab to deploy an entire grossing network for their system. You know, I mentioned the cloud-based technology episode that I was listening to the other day. I'm like, man, this is kind of like us. Because, you know, with digital pathology, pathologists don't have to wait for their slides anymore, right? They can start going as soon as we get those scans. And what we can do with Sentinel Link is we're not waiting for the tissue to arrive, because we can deploy this grossing network where assistants, or, you know, maybe even in the clinics that may be offsite from a lab, they can actually use Sentinels to transfer tissue and generate the report, which will only then be approved by a GA or PA, MD, whoever that has high complexity testing at an offsite because of our platform. So, you know, I know like these two workflows are a little bit different. It may not be for everyone. We have CAP and CLIA approval for Link. But to me, it's really exciting, as, you know, I came from a system that used couriers and sort of like a hub and spoke model, where we, you know, we centralized histology, but we had all these labs that were grossing. So it was a very complex thing. So I'm very excited, again, about the ability to remotely approve grosses, and the tissue arrives already in a cassette ready to be loaded on a processor instead.
Oh, that's interesting. I can see how that'd be very useful. And there's a lot of systems like that now that have, like you said, the hub and spoke kind of thing with remote sites and things. And I would think that would open up a whole lot of possibilities, and probably even for, you know, some of the benefit of digital pathology being like getting a consult cases and things like that. You could probably do that with the grossing aspect of it too, with something like this.
Absolutely.
All right. So the last thing then. So we're both PAs, like we mentioned, and this is a new thing for our field. And I always like to, whenever we're talking about new technologies, one of the questions that people always have is, how is this going to affect me? What do I need to learn? And do I want to do that?
Right.
You know, I've been doing this a long time. Do I really want to learn something new?
Yeah.
So as PAs, how do we prepare for changes that are coming like this?
Yeah, I think sometimes we don't give ourselves enough credit. And I totally understand. I'm very much a routine kind of person. If like one little thing gets thrown off, I can get a little bit frustrated myself, especially having like a toddler. He's also very routine oriented. So I get it. But I would say, again, like sometimes as PAs, we don't give ourselves enough credit. We are constantly innovating, to me. And obviously we've had new technologies with digital pathology and we're already doing it. Maybe you have some type of imaging device for breast, for example. But similar to how we would change our gross description or our process from maybe a pathologist to a pathologist, to me, that's the same flexibility that we should have with technology. And even pathologists do this clinician to clinician. But yeah, like I said, you know, with pathologists, some might say, I want you to map this type of specimen, take pictures and do all this. And then you do that for another pathologist and they might get upset about it, or maybe they want something entirely submitted. And then you do that for another pathologist and then they, you know. So I would see it similar to being able to flex to different pathologists. And then we've already done it, right? Think about when we first did barcoding, or maybe if your lab uses voice recognition software, some of these changes we've already made. And I think if you're interested in AI, maybe if you're kind of on that side of the spectrum, just start using it now. Before I joined VistaPath, I was already playing with, you know, ChatGPT and Midjourney, which is sort of like a text to image type of generative AI. And that really taught me to appreciate the power of just prompting the AI. And it kind of going back to the lab, a specimen is only going to be as good as how it was removed in some ways. So if the surgeon removes it poorly or kind of has some issue with that in the surgery suite, it can be challenging for us to orient. Maybe maybe you're doing a Whipple and you're like, where's the uncinate margin? You know, that it's kind of hard for them to remove this in surgery. And it kind of translates with artificial intelligence. I think we're prompting in some ways other professionals in our work now. We're prompting by saying certain descriptors in our gross description to a pathologist. So I think it translates well with PAs, and you can use it for email. Maybe you want to help with writing an email or even a grossing template. Obviously, don't use PHI. But if you want to use an example of your gross and kind of convert it to a template and change the style, maybe you want to go from paragraph to synoptic, which is kind of what I was doing. I think just getting familiar with it now can help you significantly. And there's a lot of great resources. Like I said, this is a good resource if you're into podcasts. But yeah, webinars, there's a lot of free things out there if you're hungry for it.
Okay. Yeah. So kind of the main point is don't be afraid of the technology.
For sure.
And start using it now so that you can get used to it, because it's coming.
Absolutely. And, you know, don't be discouraged if you have challenges. I think in general, there's probably a lot of people that listen to your podcast that maybe they want to be a PA, or maybe they want to be a pathologist or a director, or maybe an entrepreneur. I think for me, kind of looking back on my career path, which you helped me do by, you know, asking me this question, I was thinking about the snowstorm earlier. In some ways, I lost some of that mindset of being hungry to be a PA or being a PA student and over seasons of my career. And I think we need to keep that sort of student or snowstorm mindset, where whether it's AI or, again, maybe you want to become a leader, don't let the storm stop you from reaching your passion, because when your passion's greater than the storm, nothing's going to hold you back. And I look back at some of the hardships on those different points. I think I'd get too focused on the storm and kind of lose sight of the growth part of it. So don't, again, if you want to be a PA or maybe you want to be a leader, start where you are now.
I love that metaphor. That's great.
Yeah.
I think that's a perfect place to end. So Mateo, this has been really interesting. I'm super excited about the Sentinel. This is, it sounds like this is only the beginning of AI engrossing, which is, I think, going to be a great thing. Yeah. So Mateo Lopez, thank you very much.
Thank you again, Dennis, for the content you're making and everything you're doing for our community. Yeah, and if people are interested to learn more, we have our website. Reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'd be happy to talk more with you.
Okay, great. Sounds good. I'll put a link to the website in the show notes for sure.
Thanks, Dennis.
If you're looking for another episode of the People of Pathology podcast to check out after this one, here's a clip from my interview with Dr. Richard Levinson as we talk about applying AI models to pathology data.
And then, of course, even if all of your data is perfectly calibrated and accurate, then you need to make sure that the data that you choose to put in your model actually reflects the population that you might apply it to. And, you know, very often you might have something that's developed at Harvard or Johns Hopkins filled with, sort of wealthy white people who are getting top of the line therapy. And then you develop a model and then you try to apply it in Haiti or somewhere else where the population is completely different, both in terms of exposures and in terms of when they present, is the disease early or late. And so the answers actually will be wrong, just plain wrong, because they didn't match the input data with the population we're looking at. And that's another huge problem. And, I could go on, but that's sort of part of the story.
You can hear more from Dr. Richard Levinson in episode 159. So once again, we're highlighting the significance of embracing new technologies and AI in the field of pathology. This time, we're focused on the benefits of utilizing AI in the grossing process. The Sentinel, a modern grossing station with AI capabilities, offers substantial advantages to quickly and accurately generate gross descriptions. By utilizing AI to automate tasks such as description generation and providing quality images of specimens and cassettes, the Sentinel enhances workflow efficiency and accuracy. AI technology, like that found in the Sentinel, acts as a tool to support PAs in their work. It enables them to concentrate on more complicated tasks that demand their expertise and judgment,
This human augmentation approach ensures that PAs can operate more efficiently and effectively, leading to enhanced patient care. The point is, AI in pathology is not intended to replace people. Remember, think of it as augmented intelligence, not artificial intelligence. It helps us do our jobs better. Mateo's role as Director of Customer Success is crucial in the adoption and implementation of AI technology in pathology. He is building trust with customers. He is providing education on this new technology. These are both important things, and this communication with customers goes both ways. It not only helps drive adoption, it also allows for valuable feedback to be relayed back to the engineers for continuous improvement. The story about why VistaPath was founded might be relatable to some of us. And even if it isn't, I'm sure you can imagine what it would have been like if you or someone you know was the patient in that situation. And that's the key to this. We should embrace new technologies like the Sentinel because it can help us do a better job for those patients. If you want to find out more about the Sentinel, you can follow the link in the show notes. If you want to find out more about this podcast, you can follow it on Instagram and Twitter at People of Path, or you can just connect with me on LinkedIn. Thank you for continuing to share the show with others. Together, let's inspire the next generation of pathologists and laboratory professionals. This show is a member of Health Podcast Network, which connects listeners with conversations and stories about health, care, and well-being. You can find a link in the show notes to Health Podcast Network, and while you're there, check out some of their other interesting podcasts. Thanks for listening. I'm Dennis Strank, and I'll talk to you next time on the People of Pathology podcast.